This is Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? The show for young adults by young adults. A production of The Quest, Atlanta Catholic Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Super pumped to be here. This is Honest to God, a production of AM 1160, The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. I know I don't have to do the whole thing, Julian.
No, you don't.
I'm sorry. I got excited.
I can understand.
I was like reminiscent. I was like old school, back in the day.
Back in the day, but now we're covered by so many people. We're nationwide. We're a global.
Global.
Really.
And syndicated radio show with quadruple digit subscribers now.
That's right. And by the time
on the
this
YouTube's,
airs, we could have five digits. We could be at 10,000.
That's pretty exciting. We almost definitely will be. All right. Well, listen, let's actually get into the show today. I'm super excited. It's a conversion story show. We got Justin here with us in studio today. Justin, thanks for coming out.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it, guys.
It's going to be a party. We're going to get into all things conversion story and all things Justin here in a minute. But first, we're going to begin as we do all things in prayer in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Lord, thank you so much for this opportunity to come together today with Justin to share his story, the story of his conversion, the story of how you came into his life and the things that you have done for him, Lord. We ask on behalf of everyone in the studio, everyone in the green room, all of our listeners, that everyone have eventually, if they haven't had it already, a story of you coming into their lives and touching them, Lord. Please be with us today and every day. Help us to have a successful show, and we ask for your blessings upon everybody here and everybody in the community that is Honest to God. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
You can give me a grade.
92.5.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Comment down below what you think his grade was. His first time ever being graded.
Yeah. Sorry, it's funny because, we grade everybody's prayers. It gets kind of controversial about whether or not that's super detrimental to people's spiritual life. But I think it's fun. I think it's a fun gag. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I dared him to grade the cardinal when you interviewed Cardinal.
Yeah, Burke.
Cardinal Burke, but he wouldn't do it.
I decided not to do that. It was a good prayer, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he had a killer prayer.
Yeah. All right, so I really like conversion stories. We've got a few under our belt. Right now, our highest full episode is a conversion story.
Yeah, that's right.
Isn't
it? You should check it out. We can post a link down to it below. It's really powerful, but this one should be even more powerful.
I think so, yeah. It's right behind a video about modesty and a video about whether or not those guys from that Bollywood movie RRR are gay. So, pretty hard-hitting stuff here on AM Radio, Honest to God.
Oh, yeah. In fact, actually, that video gets probably more views per day than all of our other videos combined.
It's ridiculous. Part of the reason why I always refer to it as a Bollywood movie is because it's not a Bollywood movie, and 10,000 people keep saying that in the comments, and so I like to just continue feed that fire.
Feed the fire.
Feed the algorithm. So anyway, Justin, super glad you're here today. How long have you been Catholic?
Since 2018.
So that's like, 5 years, 6 years, something
six
like
years,
that?
Yeah.
That's awesome. Praise God. I love that.
Absolutely.
Can we just like dive in and go back to like little bitty baby Justin and talk about sort of your life growing up, sort of where you're from and all that, and then eventually get to the story of your conversion?
Yeah, sure. You want me to start?
Yeah, just rock and roll.
I was born in I was born in Norcross. We moved to Alpharetta in 1989, so I was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. So I call, Alpharetta home. My parents still live in the same house.
That's crazy because I feel like nobody's from the Atlanta suburbs.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Original Atlantan. Same with both my parents. Both my parents are from Atlanta as well.
Okay.
So, pretty normal suburban life, I'd say. A little swim and tennis neighborhood. Loving parents, great family.
Did you go to public school growing up?
Or? I did, yeah. Okay. So I went to public school all the way through. We went to church some, kind of the Creaster, right?
Right. So Catholic church?
No, just the Presbyterian Creaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
So the church was right down the street from our house. I remember, I don't know, I didn't really like to go. I think I didn't understand why we were going necessarily. We didn't talk about God too much at home. I mean, the subject of God came up, but it wasn't, a hot topic.
Right. But so if you were to ask your parents at the time, they would have said,
Sure, like we're Christians. Yeah, right. You know, it wasn't like, you know, we weren't atheists or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's just, it wasn't, you know, something that we constantly discussed.
Sure.
You know? So, you know, when, let's see, started, I went to Dolvin Elementary School, which is mm-hmm. right there in Alpharetta. You know, pretty normal, got good grades and... In elementary school?
Brother or sisters?
Yeah, sorry. So I've got one sister, one brother. My brother's 10 years younger than me.
Okay.
My sister's 4 years younger than me.
Okay.
Still have good, you know, relationships with them and everything like that.
Was there any sort of, like, moral framework? Because this is a question I ask a lot of people, because I look back. We had a... I grew up in a household fairly similar, right? There was, mm-hmm. like, a wooden cross on the wall, and, you know, there was definitely some... Christian stuff going on. My mother didn't go to church a whole lot. My dad went to church pretty regularly, but there wasn't a whole lot of conversation about morality from sort of a like a faith perspective. Did you have any sort of understanding of that growing up? Was there conversations or?
If we did, it's not something that I guess is like burned into my brain. You know what I mean? Yes, we had morality conversations, but I don't know that it was necessarily based in. In God, it was more of like what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong kind of a deal, but no like real, I guess, strict guidelines to follow.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just kind of how, you know, how it was as a kid. I remember my parents owned their own business. Mm-hmm. They're both hairdressers.
Oh, cool.
And they worked really hard, you know, and I remember that being...
Your hair looks great, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. My mom did it. You know, I remember that, like, as like childhood, my dad had kind of, he had bought a salon or started a salon, and it was, you know, it was very stressful, I'd say, for him. I remember him, you know, getting home really late. You know, they just worked hard, you know, but it was nice because, you know, when my mom was off, my dad was at work, vice mm-hmm. versa. We stayed with my grandmother a lot during mm-hmm. the week, like when we were little kids, that was great. She was super loving and, you know, just a great woman overall. So,
would you have considered yourself a Presbyterian at this time, or what would be like if your self identification?
Like if someone asked,
yeah,
I would say that I was Presbyterian. Yeah,
okay. Mm-hmm. And what did that look like going into middle school? Because usually middle school is where you start to hear. Well, I was looking at that. I was thinking about these things a little bit more. Did that change at all?
I remember kind of the main thing was I went to it was North Point Church. They mm-hmm. had this camp. Camp Highland. Okay. Maybe they still have it. But I went to this church, and there were a couple times where I felt God's presence. Mm-hmm. Or I said church. It was a camp, right? And I remember kind of feeling it at this camp, right? We were praying, and I'm like, man, these people are really into God, you know? And it was cool, though. We were praying, and I just felt different. Like, I felt... I don't know, a strong kind of emotional feeling, right? But when I came home and kind of got back to everyday life, the feeling was sort of fleeting, and I kind of forgot about, you know, the way that I felt when mm-hmm. I was at that camp. I'm trying to think. I know there was another time where something like that happened. I just can't. It's not coming to mind at the moment. But I definitely remember it at that camp.
Did you have, like, your... sort of teenage angsty atheism or agnostic stage kind of thing?
Lots of questioning. I don't mm-hmm. Like seeing is believing kind of.
Sure.
I remember having that sort of mentality about it. Like, is God real? You
right.
know, like questioning. Yes, I do remember that, but I don't like, I never was like putting my foot down. God's not real. You're doing this for nothing. Like, it was never like that. It was just more of like, I don't understand this.
That's neat. Mm-hmm. I have a super gross, like, I'm super smart and I'm smarter than everybody. And that's why I don't believe in God, because I'm not a sheep like you. I think it's almost, it's more interesting to not have the total fallen away, like, angsty, like.
Oh, I fell away, but it wasn't in that sense. Well, get to that part, I guess.
So let's jump. So we've got elementary school Justin, middle school Justin. Can you take us into high school Justin? Tell us.
Sure. So middle school, kind of the tail end of middle school, things started to change. Mm-hmm. Like, getting a little bit of trouble, you know, things like that. Eighth grade, you know, experiment with drugs mm-hmm. and alcohol. not like, you know, to some great extent, but sure. Oh, I tried it. Oh, I'm cool. Right. You know, that kind of stuff. And then, experimented with, you know, hooking up and women and all that stuff. Then going to high school, and then it was kind of really into the women and the drugs and, well, really the women and the alcohol first, then the drugs kind of came like later in high school.
And was that just kind of just sort of typical of the high school at the time? Was that just what people did?
I thought that, but looking back on it, I'm like, not everyone did that.
Right.
You know what I mean? I thought that, oh, well, I'm in high school and it feels good to drink and people like me when I drink and I feel good. And so let's do more of that because that's fun. You
sure.
know, kind of the instant gratification was just huge for me. Like I wanted results now.
Right.
And I feel like alcohol and other things like provided those results now.
Was there like, was that tied to a friend group? Like where did that come from?
I think kind of the desire to be bad a little bit, right? Like I kind of had this desire to, you know, buck the system and kind of rebel. And I thought that was cool for, I don't really know why. I just felt like that was cool.
Well,
know?
And I keep prodding into this too, because I had a super similar story where into middle school, I started to try to be like, what do I need to do to be cool, to be a man, to be like different and stand apart? Oh, the girls think it's cool when I do this or when I go do this. These guys, I get lots of pats on the back when I'm doing this. And then eventually, it's kind of that classic. I got in with not a great group of people, got into a lot of things I shouldn't be doing, started getting in trouble, like big boy trouble by ninth grade and all of this stuff. So I'm always interested in, it's almost, I guess it's almost cliche because we see it all the time on, you know, television shows and movies and stuff, the sort of high school rebellious whatever, but I always think it's interesting what somebody did at that space in time, like of the late 90s, early 2000s, whatever. Because now I think it's the way you rebel in high school is totally different and way, I'm not saying it was good when we did it, but like way lamer, like the types of rebellion now.
I would agree. I try not to say, oh, well, you know, I was hanging out with the wrong crowd or whatever, because with me and kind of, I don't know, how I've moved past some of the stuff, is part of it's like taking responsibility for it, right? So, yes, there were certain people that I hung out with that kind of progressed me faster, I guess, down that path.
Sure. But, ultimately, we have free will. I'm not
right,
trying to
excuse it. No, I know what you mean. Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, I don't want to, like, blame anybody else or anything like that. I just, you know, made a lot of wrong decisions. I didn't do the next right thing. I did the next wrong thing.
Right.
Just over and over and over and over. So, yes, trouble kind of started in high school. I got arrested. I went to jail. We were just laughing about that a second ago. It was not fun.
we were sharing. Swapping stories. Yeah.
So
that's another episode we'll do later.
Yeah. I went to jail in Fulton County and, you know, pretty much instantly knew that I didn't want to do that again.
Right.
So
how
I wasn't going to 17.
Okay.
Yeah. 17. I wasn't going to like stop doing bad things. I just was not going to get caught for them anymore.
That's the spirit.
That was the thought. It's good. And
was it during that time period, was there any sort of religion still in your life? Did you have any sort of, I don't know, ties or anything? Did you feel bad? Did you have a sense of sin or anything like that?
I just felt like I wasn't a very good person.
Right.
You know, like I didn't know how to fix it.
Right.
I didn't know that God could fix it, you know, at the time.
Yeah, I was having this conversation not too long ago. I was teaching a bunch of kids about culpability, right? Like how responsible we are for our sins. And I said, and once again, I don't want it to sound like I'm passing the buck or like I'm excusing myself. I honestly don't think I realized that any of the mess I was getting into was sinful. I honestly thought like I was so, I don't know, brainwashed by this sort of relativistic understanding of truth and this idea that as long as you're not like hurting somebody,
yeah.
right? As long as you're not hurting somebody's feelings or whatever, it's like, it's okay. Like you can cheat on your girlfriend as long as you don't tell her about it. Or you can go out on the weekend and do all these things and make all these bad decisions as long as you're not like doing like something really bad that would hurt another person. And I never thought about how it was hurting myself and how it was hurting other people indirectly, right? Through my actions. So,
I always thought that if I'm doing something wrong, right, the only person that it's hurting is me.
Right.
Right? So I totally agree with you on that. Now, if I heard other people, I didn't really care about it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I hate saying that because it sounds so bad,
it's real,
but it was the truth. I was just, you know, it was terrible. I mean, there was no... God was always there, right? I know that now, mm-hmm. but I did not know that at the time, right?
What did you know or what did you think about God during that period?
I was thinking about Justin pretty much every day.
Okay.
So I wasn't thinking about God.
Right.
I don't really remember many things coming up about God during that time.
Okay.
So towards the end of high school, I had some disagreements with friends and things like that and kind of changed friend groups. Mm-hmm. And the drugs, like, ramped up kind of almost to the point of being, well, it was out of control, but right. almost to the point of, like, needing it every day, mm-hmm. right? That scared me. So I decided that I was going to stop, like, immediately, and I did.
Oh, wow.
And then a friend of mine actually invited me to go to Mass, right? So
cool.
So I went. It was at St. Bridget, the one over on Old Alabama.
Yeah, the really pretty one with all the statues.
Yeah, really pretty one. Yeah, so that's where we went. I was like, okay, just, you know, kneel up. Oh, I had no idea what I was doing.
Was
my
friend
was kind of giving
Mass
me the key. Yeah, yeah,
really?
First one ever. So I can't, like, I can't say that I was, like, super drawn to it or anything. It was just like, oh, this was cool.
Yeah.
You know, this is different. And so then I went to college, and when I went to college, I was like, you know what, I think it's time to kind of reinvent Justin.
Right? Where'd you go to school?
Georgia Southern.
A great place to get your
great
life back
place
on
to
track.
So I go to Georgia Southern. It wasn't that I wasn't going to party and do the other things. It's just that the drugs and, like, you know, getting in trouble with the police was going to have to change.
Right.
So I went down there, had no intention of joining a fraternity or anything, but I got down there and realized that everyone joins a fraternity, mm-hmm. so I'll do that. So joined a fraternity, you know, tons of drinking, not mm-hmm. really any drugs or anything like that in college, just the normal. Well, see, I say normal, but I don't know that it was normal, right? Like, okay, let's go out, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and sometimes on Tuesdays, mm-hmm. right? So that was like the normal, the normal
take
thing.
Take it easy. Only 4 days a week,
I did get, I graduated, which was surprising.
Can I take a little step back
and
say, what was your relationship like with mom and dad through all this? Was it pretty positive overall?
Yeah, it was good. I remember, like, apologizing for them for being such a dirtbag in high school and being like, I kind of understand why you were probably irritated with me about a few things back then. And I'm sorry that I felt like I had gotten to the other side.
Right.
But I really hadn't even begun the bad part yet.
Right.
So
you felt like you'd really moderated.
Yeah.
The reason I'm asking that is because I like to focus on that. I hear that a lot, talking that. I do a lot of stuff with younger guys, right? Like fresh out of college guys and stuff like that who are going through some really serious stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll give some version of, my parents have no idea because I'm super happy and super whatever when I'm around them. Like, I'm killing it. And I kind of think I am, but now I'm reexamining my life. And I'm almost putting that out there just as a PSA to anybody, maybe one of our older listeners who has kids, and they say, oh, my kids are doing great. They go to church with me, and they're just, like, smiling, and they're happy. And it's really easy for – it was always really easy for me to put on sort of a facade and play the role that I needed to play, even to myself, where I convince myself, like, I'm not – doing heroin under a bridge, right? I'm great. I'm doing fine. It's just something to look out for. Yeah.
Yeah. We had a good relationship with, they mm-hmm. would come down and visit and I would come home. It was always nice coming home and, you know, seeing the family and really, really enjoyed that. Then my sister came down to school.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there for 5 years. No, I'm not a doctor. don't have my master's.
Sure.
Just took 5 years.
Right.
And so she came down. That was great. I feel like we really kind of built mm-hmm. that bond because we were 4 years apart, never were, like, at the same school together.
Sure.
You know, she was starting as I was leaving kind of deal. So that was pretty cool. And then I'm trying to think if there's anything else really about college. Not really. I mean, made a lot of good friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, had some relationships and, you know, with really good people, but I was not ready to be a good person. Still was extremely selfish and self-centered and wanted, you know, what I want when I wanted it, and I did go to church a few times with one of the girls I was in a relationship with, and I do remember, like, especially one night we were in, I think it was in, like, I don't know, Dawsonville or something, but we were singing Silent Night outside, and I was like, man, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, this is really a special thing. But, again, you know, kind of went back to just doing the same old stuff.
After you graduated, you said?
No, this was during college. Okay. So we went – sorry, I'm kind of jumping around, but – we came home for Christmas break, mm-hmm. went to that service, went back to school, and then it was just back to the same, you know, heavy drinking and partying and, you know, all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Then I graduated, college with an accounting degree, which is still pretty surprising to me that I was able to do that. And then went to work immediately as soon as I got home from school. So, let's see, we were in working in Buckhead and, you know, kind of living that life, but it was, I was living for the weekends, right? I was sure. Like, if this is all that life has to offer, this kind of stinks, you know, like, this is not fun. I'm sitting in a cubicle, you know, banging away on a computer. I'm like, this is awful, right?
To throw any shade at our accountants out there.
Yeah, they're great. But, they do a really good job on taxes.
But I can't imagine it's a really fulfilling job in a lot of ways in terms of the day-to-day, what you're doing, yeah.
I like the numbers of it was fun, but I'm too ADD to sit there and, like, do one thing all day. Right. So I'm like, oh, you know, now I'm in cabinetry, so I'm here and on the job. Mm-hmm. You know, I like all that stuff. Yeah, so anyways, I worked there, and then I had met this girl. I went out and worked for her family in Monroe. They had a family business doing like these big industrial racking. They manufactured it, so it was a big manufacturing plant. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. I worked out there. We ended up getting married, and that was kind of out of the blue. I don't know that I really, like, planned to do that. It just mm-hmm. sort of happened, you know? I also started an online sports book at the same time. So,
like a betting kind of
thing?
Yeah,
like where you'd go, you know, you'd sign online, you bet on games and, you know, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. I really didn't know anything about being a bookie. I just always was like, oh, how can I make money and how can I do this? And so I also started taking pain pills when I was out there. It was like a normal thing. Everyone was taking pain pills, and it was just a
were they
normal
like uppers?
Thing.
Was it like a stimulant kind of deal?
For me, yeah. Okay. It, you know, yes, for me, like, I guess it affects everyone differently, mm-hmm. but for me, I'm like, this makes me feel how I'd like to feel.
Sure.
That was the best way I can describe it. And then I remember I was like, oh, I've taken those pretty consistently. And then I didn't have them, and then I started feeling sick, and I'm like...
And these were not prescription pain pills.
No,
were,
no.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
These were gotten through some nefarious purpose. Or
correct.
Nefarious
yeah.
means, yeah.
Yeah. So I started feeling, like, really sick when I stopped taking them, and I was like, I think this is, you know, withdrawal, right?
Right.
So that was kind of, you know, a rapid... It just took off from there, right? Mm-hmm. So, anyways, we got married.
Was it a religious wedding?
It wasn't in a church. There was a pastor there.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't like, you know, one of our friends or something like that.
Sure.
It was like a real, you know, pastor. So he was there. Yeah, it was beautiful, you know, beautiful ceremony, beautiful everything. I was, you know, on drugs the entire time.
Oh,
yeah. At the point when we got married that I had to have drugs all day, every day, or else mm-hmm. I was, like, in the bed, sick, couldn't do anything. It was really, really bad at that point.
Yeah, like physically dependent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
For sure. And the bookie stuff had really kind of gotten out of control, so I was, I don't know, 26... 27, and I was making a lot of money, and mm-hmm. I had a drug addiction, and it was like fuel to the fire, and things were spiraling out of control really quickly.
Did your wife know this at the time?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, she knew. So, let's see, we got married in October, and then in January, I went to, in December, I decided that I was going to, you know, take my dad, we were going to go to the Keys, and I was going to just withdraw for the entire week and, like, get over this.
Did your dad
thing.
Know?
Was he everyone knew it. I mean, there was no hiding it, right? I mean, it was extremely obvious. I wasn't working. I was just a bookie full-time. Mm-hmm. That's all I did. Because the first year I was like, oh, well, you know, I made X amount times my salary. Like, why go to work? I could just, you know, make a bunch of money and do drugs all day.
And that was all
on
the table, too, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I claimed all of it on taxes and paid taxes on that.
That's all Uncle Sam cares about.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
It says on the form. It actually says on the form that you're supposed to...
I filled it out. Yeah, it was weird. Telling on myself, but I think this is smart, too. So.
Yeah.
Mm. So, anyways,
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah,
but,
no, you're good.
Yeah, we are coming close to break time, and I just wanted to take a moment. I know that the story is about to get juicy, but I don't want to get too much into the weeds and then have to cut off right there. So we have kind of had a natural pause. So I'm just going to take a moment to have our listeners just comment down below what you think of his story so far. And if you are listening for the first time, check out our 100th episode that just aired just a couple weeks ago. We're going to have a link, put it up right here. And the 100th episode that we filmed, we worked really hard on that. We're really proud that we're now over 100 episodes and with as many subscribers as we have. And if you're listening on the radio, make sure you check out the YouTube. And I wanted to add that in there.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, we're going to be back here in a second and pick up with Justin. Because I'm kind of like on the edge of my seat for the next part of the story.
Oh, yeah. I did that on purpose, you know, as the producer.
You're good. And as a producer, by the way, what is our 100th episode? I have no idea.
What is it? We actually cover a lot of people that have been on kind of a highlight reel of what has happened, or just various people that have been on. I think that I actually switched from the producer seat and then went into as a guest seat, and we had our former producer come on and do a stuff, and it's just a really cool episode, so definitely go on and check it out.
Make sure you check it out. Yep. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back. This is Honest to God.
Honest to God, we'll be right back.
Let's see. I have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and Paramount Plus, Spotify, and Apple Music.
Is that all?
Oh, and HBO Max.
There's nothing wrong with having streaming service subscriptions, but is it helping to bring you and others closer to Christ? Consider making the cost of one of those services to be your monthly donation to The Quest. We're totally listener-supported. We rely on donations from people like you.
And SiriusXM. Too.
Please prayerfully consider making a monthly donation to support AM 1160 The Quest.
And now, back to Honest to God, What's on Your Mind, the show for young adults by young adults.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. Pumped to be back here for part two.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. I can't wait.
It's going to be fantastic.
Sorry for the long commercial break, folks, but this show is quite expensive to put on.
Yeah, we got a lot. We need some sponsors in here. All right, we ready to jump back in?
Let's jump back in.
We did kind of leave it on a pretty intense cliffhanger right now.
Yeah,
right?
Probably one of the best we've done on Honest to God, actually.
I mean,
cliffhangers are hard to do.
It's tragic, but yeah, no, it is. So where do we leave off? You said you had been married, you were sort of in the throes of this struggle with addiction and all of these other things, and you were going with your dad to try to get clean over the course of a...
Right.
Yeah.
So I got a house in the Keys. We went down there day one. I was still feeling pretty good, so we went on a fishing trip. My dad's always wanted to catch a sailfish, so that was the goal. We went, and I caught the sailfish, and he caught a big grouper. So that was kind of a bummer. It was still fun. We had a good time, but, you know, we really wanted him to catch the sailfish. The rest of the week was terrible. You know, it was just
physically terrible?
Full-blown withdrawal, sweating, and, I mean it's kind of like the flu, but the mental aspect of it, just right. You feel like a horrible, you know, person
right.
The entire time. So it's like impending doom and mm-hmm. you know, stress and oh. whatever. So, you know, it's all it's rough, it's terrible, whatever. So, but by the end of it, I was kind of, you know, turning around, came home. I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, feeling pretty good. But then the desire to, you know, do drugs
right.
was still there, right? Because I was abstain from it for a week, right?
Sure.
I didn't, like, fix any underlying problems. So the desire to, you know, still do drugs was there.
It's like you got over the physical dependency part, but there was still the psychological everything involved.
It was the non-God part.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
That was the part. I didn't know that at the time. I was, you know, still waiting to learn that lesson. So came back and within, I don't know, a week, maybe I was, you know, back on drugs daily, you know, daily use of drugs. Then I went to a treatment facility. You know, it was 35 days, whatever it was. So I didn't even really want to go. I remember going like to appease everyone else because everyone knew like how bad things had gotten. So I went to that. So, you know, sober and did the 30 days or whatever. And I felt really good, you know, by the end of that, yeah. right? It was 12-step based.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to some of the meetings and stuff. And I don't know that I was, like, completely bought into it.
Right.
But I knew that I felt better, you know, being away from it for 30, 35 days, whatever.
And can I just do a real quick plug for 12-step? Programs in general, because we've had multiple people on the show who've come and talked about it. I know multiple people in my life that it's not just Alcoholics Anonymous, right? They've got it for different kinds of drug use. They have Sexaholics Anonymous, which even includes, I don't mean to minimize by saying even includes, but includes things like pornography addictions and all of that. I just highly recommend it from all the people I know in my life, right? Dear friends who have gone through that. They seem to work well. So I don't know what your experience was, but.
Yeah, I don't. It says, like, specifically, you know, don't mention it in press, radio, and film, so I just kind of say 12-step loosely, you know? So anyways, I, you know, went through the program. I got out. I did what's called an outpatient program where you're not staying at the facility, but you go in every day for a couple hours, whatever. And then I, you know, went straight back to drugs again, you know, and it was like I just could not break the cycle. So it was, you know, do drugs, then try to stop, then do drugs, then try to stop, and, you know, back and forth. So eventually, you know, my ex-wife, she had had enough of that, right? So we separated. I went to stay with my parents, and she stayed at the house that we had in Brookhaven. We kind of went back and forth for a little bit about, you know, are we going to get divorced? Are we not going to get divorced? You know, what's going on? And eventually we, you know, decided, yes, we are going to get divorced. So we, you know, went through with that. And at the same time, it was like things had gotten really bad with the whole gambling thing. Mm-hmm. So it was really good for a while. And then all of a sudden, you know, I lost a ton of money in 1 month mixed with, so I was at, I mean, rock bottom, right? I didn't even have the money to, like, get the drugs that I needed in order to just function during the day. And I'm like, this is getting really bad, right? So, at that point, it had also gone from pain pills to heroin at that point. And then it went from heroin to, you know, mixing cocaine with heroin. So it just kept progressing worse and worse. And I was like, you know, and I've talked to someone recently, a good friend. I talked to him about it and I was like, man, I just had this feeling that I was going to be sober one day, but I had no idea how to get there. None.
Right.
I just had this feeling. And I wonder, I'm like, you know, well, what about the people that died? Did they have that same feeling? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
Right.
You know? So eventually I had just kind of hit this point where I said, you know, I'm either going to die or, like, I'm going to do something about this, right? So then I went to a 12-step program, you know, met a guy while I was there that really kind of took me under his wing and, you know, showed me what to do, how to do it. And I just said, look, you know, I tried every different way to do it by myself. So I just decided I was going to do the way that they were telling me to do. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of one of those people that you can tell me all day exactly how to do something, but I'm going to do it my way and run into the wall 10 times right. and then I'll learn the lesson and then I won't do it again, you know? And, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that seems to be how I do things. So anyways, I, you know, followed the steps. And I remember there was this one part and it was like, you know, basically turn everything over to God. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
this is from the guy. This is from,
no, this is from the program, okay. This 12 step program. So I was like, I don't know what that means. Right. Like I'm the one that does this and that every day. So what it like, I can't just say, hey God, I'm just going to sit right here and I want you to do everything.
Yeah.
Right. And so that I struggled with that one for a while. And then I was like, you know, I don't really know what that means, but I'm going to commit to doing it and I'm going to move through that. Shortly after that, I met, my wife, Kim. We started dating and Kim, and her family are Catholic. And, you know, at the beginning I was very, you know, very arrogant, very selfish. And you know, that was very apparent to Kim. And you know, I think that she liked me, but saw that, and mm-hmm. that's not really a trait that someone wants in a husband. Right. Sure. So, I talked to her and I don't remember exactly how it happened. I was like, I saw something in Kim that I really, really wanted, right? Yeah. Like that was in her life. And now I know like it was God. It mm-hmm. was her relationship with God. I didn't know it really at the time, but I said, hey, look, you know, I want to go to church with you and I want to progress in this relationship with you. So she, you know, decided to give it another chance and we started going to mass. And then it was like, you know, things changed for the best in our relationship. So we started going to mass every Sunday and, you know, it was like, I felt a part of something and I felt this relationship with God growing between this 12 step program, which very closely follows Catholic principles.
Okay, cool.
So with the two, it was like, I had this really good framework. Right. And I just wanted more of like, whatever I was feeling. Right. And in this relationship with God, I'm like, man, this is really what I've always been looking for, but I was looking in every wrong place that you could possibly imagine. But then I realized this is where I need to be.
Was there ever, like, because you're talking about sort of going to mass and you're with this girl and you see this thing in her, right, which ultimately is God. And it was there a single moment when you were like, oh my goodness, this is what it is? Or was it just sort of this gradual understanding that that's what I'm missing in my life?
Gradual understanding. There was never like the, you know, white light moment. Mm-hmm. I don't think where, like I never heard God speak to me or anything right. like that. I just had this overwhelming feeling that like everything was going to be okay. And like, mm-hmm. I was on the right path, I guess is the best way I could describe it, you know?
Yeah. That's beautiful.
So we, you know, went to mass and, you know, started going to mass every Sunday. Mm-hmm. She also had a daughter that was four, mm-hmm. Sophia. Sophia, you know, I was like, just had a blast with her. You know, we wrestle in the living room and do whatever and dance and, you know, just do all the fun stuff with kids. So that was something that I'd never really experienced before.
Right.
You know, kind of the somewhat of a fatherly role that was kind of cool, you know, really cool. And so anyways, her family, her dad, she's just awesome, has a really good dad. You know, I really look up to him and I respect him very much. And her mom is, you know, sweetest lady and, you know, would do anything for us. They, you know, sat down at the table and ate together every mm-hmm. night and it was just cool, you know. So we you know, kept going to mass and I was, you know, still going to my 12-step program and, so
were you sober at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, but I was on this pill that they give you. It's called Suboxone.
Okay.
Right. And I don't like it. I think, you know, looking back on it, my emotions were out of whack. Mm-hmm. I wasn't I was feeling things, but not to their full extent, or maybe over feeling them. So I can't consider that to be sober now. I felt like I was at the time. I wasn't actively doing drugs, but I was taking this pill that was prescribed to me.
That's what I was going to say. Suboxone is surprised. Yes, prescribed for people who are trying to get out of chemical addiction. Yeah,
but eventually you have to get off that, right? Mm-hmm. So then I, you know, start tapering off. You can't just kind of quit it cold turkey. So I start tapering off, and the desire to do the drugs comes back. And I, Kim had had a, she had had surgery and she was given pain pills. And I, you know, snuck some of the pain pills, right? And she caught me doing it, like just the shame. It was horrible. You know, I was like, man, I feel like such a, you know, piece of crap. And it was, so that was the last day that I ever, you know, did any pain pills. And that was in 2017.
Okay.
September 27th of 2017. So I was, you know, honest with her about it. Well, I mean, I got caught, but I was still kind of just laid it out. Like, hey, look, the feeling was still there. I thought I could control myself with this, but I can't. And so anyways, I, you know, kept going to mass, kept going to the 12 step. And then I had started this like painting and deck building business, whatever. So we were painting somebody's house and I see the crucifix on the wall, right? So I start talking to them about it. And I find out that their son actually is the one that leads RCIA at St. Brendan's. And St. Brendan's is where we were going to mass.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I feel like God's kind of saying, hey, you know, I've teed this up for you. Like, you know, yes or no. Right, yes or no, and I'd already kind of been...
Did you start talking to him about it because of the crucifix? Like, you saw the crucifix and that sparked the conversation? And that's cool.
And I saw it, and I was like, I get, you know, I'm assuming they're Catholic, I'm going to talk to him about it, and, you know, so when that happened, I decided that I was going to go through RCIA, and I was going to be Catholic. So I went through RCIA, and, you know, during RCIA, I, you know, decided that I wanted to marry Kim. Like, I knew that... Hey, this is the one, you know? But she had talked and she had said, hey, look, you know, I can't marry you if you're still doing this booky stuff. I can't, you know, I can't do that, right? I can't, like, bring my daughter into that,
that makes
life.
Sense.
And I'm like, okay, I, you know, totally get that. So when I was done with RCIA, I, you know, gave the book over to someone else and said, hey, I'm done with this. And he goes, you know, I'll talk to you in a couple months. I said, no, I'm done. Like, I'm never going to do this again. It's over with, you know, it's fun, whatever, but enjoy it. And you can, you know, do whatever you want with it, but I'm done. So then, you know, at the Easter Vigil Mass, we all came out, we're in the narthex. And then when Kim came out, I proposed to her right there.
Stop it. That is great. That was really cool.
I remember like Sophia running up to us. That's embarrassing. Sorry, it's just, man, it's
we
like...
We can pause, we can cut, whatever you want.
No, it's okay, it's fine. Let's keep going. So Sophia ran up and, like, she just gave us a big hug. And, you know, Kim was so happy. And my family was there. Her family was there. And, like, I knew everything was going to be okay, you know?
That is beautiful. That and, is...
Sorry.
No, dude.
I've told the story a couple times, but it's just, I don't know. It's like you go from the brink of death, like being saved by God, and not.
Well, and I'll take a second too to just talk briefly about the role that really good women play in our lives, right? Because I mean, you talk about an instrument that God used, right? And I think when you were telling that story earlier, and you were talking about meeting Kim and realizing there's something different about her, and then she has this daughter there, and you're playing around and you're taking on this paternal role for the first time. There is something about, as a man, having, like, getting a taste of what we're actually made to do, what our primary vocation on this earth after our salvation, right, which is to be a husband and father, right? That's a big deal. And I think we don't realize that. We hide from that. I don't think we realize that we're running and hiding from that. But we do in all these ways, and that is 100% the devil. And then you get a little bit of that, and it's like, oh, wait, this is actually all I ever wanted, was to be the kind of man that God wants me to be, and that I secretly, right, I want that. I want to be a father. I want to be a provider. I want to be a protector. I want to be good, right? Not goody two-shoes, Boy Scout, Opie, you know, Taylor good. I want to be authentically, virtuously good. I just think that's yeah. beautiful.
I think that was a, like, perfect way of explaining yeah. it, too. It was like, you know, the feeling that I'd been looking for in all the wrong places, it was like, it's been right in front of my face the entire time. I just didn't know how to, I didn't know how to do it, or maybe I didn't want to do it, you know, bad enough, or maybe I just needed to go through the fire in order to experience the love, right? Right? So, you know, sometimes I think about, I'm like, you know, Justin, do you regret all the things that you've gone through? And the answer is no, mm-hmm. because I wouldn't know the love if I hadn't walked through the fire. Right. And I do remember times where I'm like, okay, I feel like I'm so far gone, right? Mm-hmm. That I don't really know how you, like, get back on track yeah. at this point. But that's why, you know, I'm a human. I think the way that I do, and God does what he does, and I don't have to understand it, but I know that he's the one that ultimately makes that decision.
Right.
So, you know, the other thing is, it's like, I don't feel like it was me that got me sober. I feel like God decided that it was my time to be sure. sober. Right? Right. The only thing I feel like I did was to be willing to accept his love.
Right.
You know? So, you know, that, you know, from there, now, you know, I had to go through the annulment, right? Mm-hmm. So that took two years for us to go wow. through the annulment.
Yeah.
The plan was to get married in April of 2020. So mm-hmm. everything was waylaid,
sure.
waylaid with COVID. So we had, you know, 10 people mm-hmm. at the wedding.
That's
we
great.
Danced in my parents' cul-de-sac, you know, yep. and had a reception on their back porch. And I thought it was just such a, you know, perfect ending, I guess, for not ending, but beginning for Kim yeah. and I, which was like to focus on the real meaning of marriage, you know, which it's just between, you know, us and God. Right. right. And we had to really focus on that because we were just upset, you know, the family couldn't come and all that kind of stuff, but it forced us to focus more on that, which I think was really a blessing.
Right, focus on what it's really about.
Yeah, yeah, and that was cool, you know?
One thing you told me a long time ago, we were sort of talking about the story, and you said that the annulment took so long, and it was such a pain in the rear end, and there were points where you kind of had permission from all the faithful, like from a lot of faithful people in your life that were just saying, dude, just get married, it's okay, right?
Yeah.
Clearly, you know, your former marriage, that's annullable, right? You whatever. And you guys made the decision to say, no, we're not. We're going to do this the way that we're supposed to do this. And I mean, talk about, like, bravery and, like, sticking to the faith at a time of, I hear so many horror stories about the annulment process, and I can't imagine. So I just think that's really cool that you guys
yeah
did
the
it.
Lady actually that did our annulment, she no longer does it. She said, after, you know, what you guys went through, the annulment, I refuse to do it anymore.
Right.
And I was like, well, I took, you know, I respected her decision to do that, but I'm like, but, you know, on the other end, yes, we did stick it through and went through it, and it was really tough, and we're like, okay, we're ready to get married and all the rest. But yeah, I am definitely glad that we, you know, stuck it through and stuck to our guns and said, no, we're going to start off our marriage on the right foot. And yes, it is annoying and it's tough and whatever, but we're just going to do it.
Right.
You know? So
can you fast forward to today and talk about mm-hmm. Justin right now and family life and all that stuff?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, we have three children. Mm-hmm. So I have my stepdaughter, Sophia, she's now 12. Carter, he turned 3 on Tuesday.
Who I saw yesterday, and he looks exactly like you. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone yeah, says that. He's like, you know, has his bow and arrow and wants to go hunting and all this stuff.
I know
stuff,
people say that all the time, and a lot yeah. of times I fake that because I'm like, yeah, he does look like I, you know, the kids look like kids.
Yeah.
But he's really just you as like yeah. an action figure. Yeah.
He's my little buddy.
That's cool.
And then Maverick, who's mm-hmm. our youngest son.
He doesn't look like either of y'all.
No, not at all. He turns 1 tomorrow, actually. So yeah. We live in Cumming. I have a business. We do cabinetry. Mm-hmm. My wife breeds corgis.
Heck
and,
yeah.
You know, we're happy. You know, we're happy, and we go to mass, and I'm a Knight of Columbus. I could probably volunteer a little bit more.
Yep.
If I'm being honest, but you know, I do some things with the church, and you know, I try to just be involved in that. Even though we're super busy, I try and like volunteer or do things or talk to people about God or try and you know, help if someone reaches out to me or you know, like you had asked me to do this or what was the other
retreat thing a while back.
So you know, it's tough to talk about this stuff sometimes, but you know, my hope would be that, you know, my story would help somebody else.
Right.
You know, that's what my, you know, intention would be by sharing the story, you know.
Early on, you talked about how obviously from the time, you know, you started getting into trouble when you're younger and then older in college and everything, you said obviously God was there all along, and I didn't see it, but you made some mention of when I look back, I can kind of see that better, right? I can sort of understand God's presence there. Do you have any specific moments? Do you have anything that...
Yeah. So when I got arrested, they were looking for someone that was doing these arsons and burglaries and all this kind of stuff. It wasn't me, but they didn't believe me at all at the time. Because we were in the same area kind of, you know, doing some similar things. So as I'm sitting in jail, I'm watching the TV and I see that they caught this arsonist, right? And I'm like, oh, I have the worst luck in the world. I mean, you know, they thought that was me. That wasn't me. I mean, clearly they caught that guy. But I'm like, actually, I was the luckiest dude in the world because I didn't get in trouble for that, something that I didn't do, right?
Right.
And that does happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in that instance, that's just one example. I mean, there's a million more that are like that. But I was looking at it under a negative connotation where, in fact, it was actually like a positive, you know, thing. So
I've started adding to my little morning prayer routine, going through all the things I had to be thankful about, right? And that sounds lame and cheesy, and it's the best exercise in the entire world. And I say that I do my prayers are sort of lined up as I start with thank yous, and then I do I'm sorrys, and then I do pleases, right?
Yeah.
So, but my list of thank yous just gets progressively longer, and I totally, like, I'm prideful and arrogant and feel like I'm put upon all the time because how could somebody as great as me have to deal with this? But it's a great time to look back and be like, dude, shut up. Like, what are you doing? Like, you've got it better than you could ever possibly deserve. And I just think those thank yous are super important. I'm sure somebody smarter than me told me that structure my prayer a long time ago. This is kind of cliche and hokey here at the end, but worthwhile, I think. Do you have like a message? Do you have like a thing to tell people who are struggling with addiction of any variety? Right? That like a, I don't know, just somebody who's been through it and has kind of come out on the other side. It's super cool. Do you have anything to say to people who are there, who are in the mud and muck right now?
Yeah, I think the main thing would just be don't give up on it. I see some people give up and just say, oh, well, I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life, so I'm just going to keep going, going. I think the other thing would be, you know, just be willing to learn new things, you know, accept the fact that you're not always right. Accept the fact that there is another life, right, on the other side of this addiction that's beautiful.
Right.
And God is that life, right? And so when you're in the throes of the addiction, it's impossible to know that or to even believe that can be. But I can tell you that I've been on both sides of it, and the other side is beautiful, and it's exactly what you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Even if you don't realize that you want it. I always separate happiness and joy when I'm talking about this. Like, there's a lot of ways to be temporarily happy.
Yeah,
there's a whole lot of things I could do right now to make me really temporarily happy that would give me no joy, right? That would not actually better me as a person. Joy comes from virtue and living as you should, as you ought to.
Well, right? The people that choose happiness, right? Like, with material, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be material things, but overall, they want joy as well. They just don't, like you said, they're still seeking joy, but they're getting temporary happiness instead.
Well, it's that whole St. Augustine line, right, of your heart will not rest until it rests in Christ. And it sounds so cliche and dumb when we say it. And I hate to say that sounds dumb, but it does. Yeah. We live in a culture where all these things are considered like, oh, yeah, that's cute, little whiz. You know, you might as well be, like, quoting a Disney movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, no, that's the truth, and that's how human beings have understood it for thousands of years. And it's us now recently in the modern world who are throwing that to the wayside and saying, no, I don't need it anymore.
I know better.
Yeah. I do want to throw out one more question. How has this story affected the way you're going to raise your children?
So right now I'm reading the Bible. I'm almost halfway through. You know, I want my kids to be able to come to me and ask me these questions about God and be able to, you know, answer them. You know, I'm really happy that my kids aren't going to see me in that life.
Praise
you
God.
Know? Yeah. Now, you know, they're going to become whoever they're going to become. I'm just going to try and build the best foundation that I can, and that foundation is God-centered.
Yeah. So praise God, man. We need dads, more dads who think that way. I'm doing my best to try to keep up, falling short every day. All right. I think that's all the time we got for today.
Yes.
All right, guys. Thanks you for being here, Justin.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Guys at home, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This has been Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlantis Catholic Radio. Producer Julian.
Signing off.
Over and out.
This has been Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? The show for young adults by young adults. A production of The Quest, Atlanta Catholic Radio.